Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 41. Purusheshu api Raja Indra Supatram Ramanam Brahmana Vidu Tapasa Vidyaya Tushtya Date Vedam Hare Tanam Purusheshvapi Rajendra Supatram Ramanam Vidu Tapasa Vidyaya Tushtya Datte Vedam Harestanam Purusheshvapi Rajendra Sapatram Ramanam Vidu Tapasa Vidyaya Tushtya Tate Vedam Harestanam Purusheshvapi Rajendra Supatram Ramanam Vidu Tapasa Vidyaya Tushtya Tate Vedam Harestanam. Please chant. Ladies. Purusheshu, among persons, api, indeed, Raja Indra, O best of kings. Supatram, the best person. Brahmanam, the qualified Brahman. Vidu, one should know. Tapasa, due to austerity. Vidyaya, education. Tushya, and satisfaction. Date, he assumes. Vedam, the transcendental knowledge known as Veda. Hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tanum, body or representation. Do that again. Body or representation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Narada Muni is speaking to King Yudhishthira. My dear king, of all persons, a qualified Brahman must be accepted as the best within this material world, because such a Brahman, by practicing austerity, Vedic studies, and satisfaction, becomes the counterpart body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. My dear King, of all persons, a qualified Brahman must be accepted as the best within this material world, because such a Brahman, by practicing austerity, Vedic studies, and satisfaction, becomes the counterpart body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. From the Vedas, we learn that the Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Person. Every living entity is an individual person, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the Supreme Person. A Brahman who is well-versed in Vedic knowledge and fully conversant with transcendental matters becomes a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore one should worship such a Brahman or Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is superior to a Brahman because, whereas a Brahman knows that he is Brahman, not matter, a Vaishnava knows that he is not only Brahman, but also an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, worship of a Vaishnava is superior to worship of the deity in the temple. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Sakshad darit vein asamasta shastre. In all scriptures, the spiritual master, who is the best of the Brahmins, the best of the Vaishnavas, is considered to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This does not mean, however, that the Vaishnava thinks himself God, for this is blasphemous. Although a Brahman or Vaishnava is worshipped as being as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such a devotee always remains a faithful, servant of the Lord, and never tries to enjoy the prestige that might accrue to him from being the Supreme Lord's representative. This fits the picture of Srila Prabhupada perfectly. He's glorified, he's honored, he's worshipped, and yet he never forgets that he is a servant. And we'll be talking a little bit about that as I get into this particular purport. Om Agina Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmaritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Translation, my dear king, of all persons, a qualified Brahman must be accepted as the best within this material world, because such a Brahman, by practicing austerity, Vedic studies, and satisfaction, becomes the counterpart body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First, it's useful for us to have a clear understanding of the difference between a Brahman and a Vaishnav. They can be the same, but there is a distinction, and Srila Prabhupada is making that distinction. And we also have to understand that a Brahman is a social position in a society, just as a Kshatriya is a social position, and a Vaishya is a social position, and a Sudra is a social position, each one performing specific kinds of work which help the ongoingness of the society. And when all the different varnas and ashrams work together in a cooperative way, then the society, functioning under the direction and under the knowledge of the Vedas, works smoothly. Everyone makes his or her contribution, and people can develop true happiness. So a Brahman is a person, generally, he understands that he has a duty to perform. He performs various types of rituals, he rites and various kinds of ceremonies, he studies the Vedas, he develops certain qualities, and in a society, also he worships the deity, the deities, and in a society, he's called upon to perform various kinds of functions, such as, for example, these different ceremonies, haircutting ceremonies, birth ceremonies, death ceremonies, grain ceremonies, opening a new home ceremony. These are different ceremonies for auspiciousness in this material world. And he does this because, as I said, they are done with reference to prayers to the Supreme Lord, who will ideally bless the person who is receiving, or persons who are receiving, the particular ceremonies or rites or rituals from the Brahman. The idea being that they, as a result of the Brahman performing these, the Lord will give his blessings upon them, and that's what actually people in general seek, the blessings of the Brahman, because the Brahman, generally speaking, leads a pure life. I already said that he does all the different functions he does are in relationship or in connection with the Supreme Lord, and enabling persons to develop piety, rectitude, righteousness. But that is the main function of the Brahman. Now, when the Brahman performs his or her duties, then the Brahman is generally positive and optimistic and encouraging and enthusiastic and helpful to the persons whom he serves. And in response, the persons who are served often offer to the Brahman various types of gifts according to time, place, and circumstance, and according to his or her own position in the society. Well, for example, we see that whenever the Brahmins perform some auspicious ceremony, we see Nanda Maharaj offering the Brahmins cows. He offers them gold, he offers silver or jewels. Whatever is proper for that particular time and place and circumstances are offered to the Brahmins. And generally, if one has an enormous amount to offer, then he offers a tremendous amount. And in return for that, of course, the Brahmins give lots of blessings. I remember when, for example, in the pastime of the Kaliya's serpent, after Krishna was apparently, he destroyed the Kali, well, not destroyed, but he knocked into a state of unconsciousness the Kaliya's serpent, who he had had a very heavy duty fight with. And finally he escaped. All the residents of Vrindavan who were watching this fight, they were in great anxiety. Prior to that, Krishna allowed the Kaliya's servant to get him in his coils and squeeze and squeeze. And all the residents of Vrindavan were so frightened. They were so anxious because their Krishna, their lovable, adorable Krishna, appeared to be, looked like he was going to be squashed or smothered to death. And Krishna was deliberately doing this because he wanted to increase the intensity of their focus and their concentration and their love on him. This is how he tricks the residents of Vrindavan, how he increases their love for him by placing himself in an apparent dangerous position. And therefore, they all became very much aggrieved, so much so that, for example, Mother Yashoda, she was going to go right into the Yamuna and fight with the Kaliya's servant. Just see the temerity, the boldness, love that she had for Krishna. She didn't think that I'm a woman, I'm not strong enough to fight with that servant. Her only thought was, no, I'm going to kill that servant to save my Krishna. This is the position of Mother Yashoda, who so much, so greatly loved Krishna, that she was ready at any given time to risk her life for her Krishna. Of course, she was stopped by the other women and the men. They stopped her from going into the Yamuna. And then Nanda Maharaj, he wanted to go into the Yamuna River. And Balaram, knowing the whole situation, that Krishna was not at all in danger, because Balaram is Balaram. He's the Supreme Lord, and he has knowledge of what Krishna is doing, and he knows why Krishna is doing it. So he stopped Nanda Maharaj. He stopped a few other cowherd men. He says, don't worry, Krishna can take care of himself. He'll get out of this. Don't worry. And of course, that's exactly what happened. Krishna freed himself. The devotees were fainting out of the sense and feeling that if Krishna died, they would be in total, complete separation from their beloved Krishna. And that's what he wanted to bring them to, this such a great intensity of love. So similarly, in the pastime of Krishna and the gopis on the autumn night of the Ras Lila dance, when Krishna disappeared for them, his real reason for disappearing was not the pride. He wanted to intensify the affection of the gopis, and they almost pretty much went crazy looking for Krishna. They started talking to the trees, oh Malati tree, oh Arjun tree, oh this tree and that tree. Have you seen the son of Maharaj Nanda? We're looking for him. We're just dying at our separation from him. Can you please tell us? And they would talk to the creepers. After a while, they got to the point where the sense of separation was so intense that they began seeing Krishna in their own mind, and they began acting out as if they were Krishna. This is not like some of these sahajas who put on makeup and lipstick, and they do a whole, drag trip. So this is not that. These are girls who actually feel so close to Krishna they can't get him out of their mind, and they see him clearly, and they begin enacting the different pastimes of Krishna. That's because that sense of separation becomes closed up slowly but surely until actually they're actually thinking they're Krishna. One gopi is getting on, fighting with another gopi like the cowherd boys do, or acting like she's lifting up Govardhan Hill as if she were Krishna. Just see my power, just see my greatness, and things of that sort. So this is actually very wonderful for them, because their absorption in Krishna, this is what we call samadhi, when all the senses are completely absorbed in the beloved, in the Supreme Lord. So now coming back to this particular purport and particular verse, there's a statement which is mentioned that that the devotee is... Now, I talked about the Brahmin. Let me just backtrack for a moment. And then there's the Vaishnav, because I didn't really talk about that, that particular. So the Vaishnav is not actually a social position. It's a spiritual position. By a spiritual position, it means, basically, that this is a person who worships, loves, adores, is surrendered to Lord Vishnu or Krishna, and his only or her only business is to try to please the Lord through devotional service. And Prabhupada makes this point and uses those words, devotional service. As I said, a Brahmin may be on the altar and doing his duty, but he may not have that desire to give pleasure to Krishna. That may be missing. Because he may not, I'm not saying that's the necessity. Many Brahmins, as it says, it's mentioned here, are Brahmin Vaishnavs. And they do desire to give Krishna pleasure through their different services, whether it's dressing the deities, or whether it's worshiping the deity, or praying to the deity, or chanting the name of the deity. They want to give pleasure to the Supreme Lord. Because that's their only business. They know there is no one else who is more worthy of being given pleasure. To them, Krishna is their end-all, be-all, and everything. And they live and thrive for no other reason than they could perhaps, hopefully, increase the pleasure of Krishna. It is an effort, and it is not a complacent effort. It's not like, well, I'm doing this, and therefore Krishna will be happier. No, no, let me do it well. Please, Krishna, help me in every way, in any way possible, to be able to please you. Let me do this in a manner which will be befitting and which you will like and which will give you an increase of the pleasure that you're already experiencing. Krishna is always blissful. Krishna is always peaceful. Krishna is always happy. But the devotee, due to his pure love, unconditional love, undemanding love, uninterrupted love, constant love, absorbed love, focused love, can increase the pleasure of Krishna. For example, let us say Krishna is always experiencing, I'm giving a rather crude example, but let us say Krishna is always experiencing 10 feet of bliss. So the devotee, by his service, by his love, by his unconditional offering and his surrender and his sacrifice and his submission, and his eagerness to see Krishna increase his pleasure, that he can bring that level up to 20 feet waves of bliss, 30 feet waves of bliss, 50 feet waves of bliss. So in so doing, because Krishna is more and more blissful as a result of that loving service, which he did experience in connection with and in relationship with the gopis of Vrindavan, they became extremely dear to him. So when a devotee or devotees are very dear to the Supreme Lord, then they become, by extension, worshipable. Very worshipable. Because when a why worshipable? Because they are dear to the Lord. And whoever or whatever is dear to the Lord, whether it's his paraphernalia, whether it's his friends, whether it's the prasadam, whatever is dear to the Lord is worshipable. And therefore, when we have devotees who are obviously, for example, like Srila Prabhupada was extremely dear to the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada had all the earmarks and all the indications of great surrender. Now, what is that great surrender? A great Vaishnava accepts whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. He rejects whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. He believes firmly that the Lord will always protect his devotee. He feels always dependent upon the Supreme Lord. He has no separate interest except the interest of Krishna. He will think of nothing else. He wants to do nothing else except to give love of God, love of Krishna, to whomever, wherever he or she can. Why? Because he or she is experiencing this wonderful transcendental bliss this transcendental happiness, this transcendental fulfillment, which fills one, which expands one, and which compels one to want to share it very much. I sometimes have given the illustration of a woman who may be pregnant, and when it has come to term and she wants to have her child, she's pining and yearning and crying out for the child to come out. And when the child finally comes out, there is a great sense of relief and a great sense of happiness. Similarly, the devotee is pregnant with love of God. And that pregnancy is an expansion in the heart. And that expansion in the heart manifests itself in a desire, an intense desire, depending upon the degree of love that Krishna is investing him with or infusing him with. And depending upon that degree, to that degree, he wants to give it out. That pregnancy finally comes to a term, and that he expands it. He gives out books. He gives prayers for devotees who may be suffering. He approaches devotees who he may see may not be having a smooth time of things, may not be peaceful. Maybe there's some agitation there. Maybe there's some confusion or doubt there. So he wants to do something to dispel those things, something that will enable the devotee to come to a better state of peacefulness or reconciliation with the Supreme Lord. His only concern is to enable others to have this Krishna consciousness, to expand, to develop their Krishna consciousness, and to the degree that he tries, whether he succeeds or not, it's all in Krishna's hands. Ultimately, as Krishna says, you have the right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities. So who is the cause? The ultimate cause of the results of our activities is Krishna. But the devotee, he is concerned about results, but he's not attached to the results. If the result comes, then that came because Krishna gave it. And if it doesn't come, well, that's because Krishna didn't give it. Or maybe I made a mistake, and he evaluates. No, I didn't see any mistakes, but maybe I did. Anyway, ultimately, all results are the result of Krishna's giving us our karma or omitting certain things or giving certain things. Certain gifts are come to us or they may not come to us. So the devotee is very much concerned with trying to share and trying to spread and trying to give Krishna consciousness wherever he can or she can. So therefore, in that sense, as we have in the text or the purports mentioned, he or she becomes worshipable. Primarily because he or she has become dear to Krishna. That which is dear to Krishna becomes worshipable. For example, we have our Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have Krishna and we have Rama. So why Hare? God is Krishna and God is Rama. Hare is the internal energy of the Supreme Lord. And is known as the greatest of devotees. Extremely dear. It's mentioned in so many places in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Radharani is so dear, so pleasing to Krishna, that anything she will ask for, he will give. So when we chant the name Hara or Radha, we are giving pleasure to the Supreme Lord, because when we chant her name, and she, of course, is so dear to him, we become dear by extension. When we are glorifying someone or something that Krishna is pleased by or pleased with, that gives pleasure, more pleasure to Krishna. So we chant her name and we chant Krishna's name and we chant Lord Ram's name. And they, seeing that we are chanting her name, they are pleased, and their pleasure manifests in what? In giving us blessings, in giving us their grace, giving us their affection, making arrangements for us so that our spiritual life may go on in an upward spiral rather than a downward spiral. So Krishna is very much pleased when we worship devotees. It is mentioned in the Krishna book. Krishna himself says, those who worship me directly are not my devotees, but those who worship my devotees, they are my devotees. So what does he mean by this? He means that we should not be so bold and so pretentious as to feel that we are so advanced, we are so glorious, we are so great, that we can just go right to Krishna. It's a little like in a corporation. If you wanted to speak, for example, to the president or CEO of a corporation, oh, let's just take Savas right here. You want to go and you want to speak to the temple president, you just don't open the door and barge in and say, hey, I got a problem, Prez. Nobody says like that. You have to make an appointment. You know, we all have problems. And can you imagine 5 or 6 persons converging on his office and banging on the door? Hey, we got problems. No, everything is arranged. You call, go to Chandra, and you say, go to Chandra Prabhu, you know, I've got a problem. Could you think you can arrange for me to see Svabhas today? And he would say, well, how serious is the problems? Is it under boiling point, or can you wait a few hours? So once it's determined and screened, then an appointment can be made, and then but you had to go through the first person was Goda Chandra, who sets the appointment up. Similarly with the Supreme Lord, you just don't barge in and walk in. Hey, I'm here, Lord. I'm ready to worship you. See my opulence. See my importance. Well, that's not the way we approach. So by approaching devotees who are dear to the Lord and who recommend us to the Lord, that is the easiest, that is the best, that is the greatest way to get the attention and the affection of Krishna. That is why when we call to Srimati Radharani, who is extremely dear to the Lord, if she puts in a good word for you, even if the Lord has been dissatisfied with some of your activities, he will bypass his own opinion and go by her opinion, because he does not want to displease Srimati Radharani in the slightest. She is extremely dear to him, and he likes to keep her pleased. Of course, Krishna has his independence, and he can do what he wants, but he is a sentient being, and he is affected by the feelings and the thoughts and the actions of his devotees. So that's why it's so important for us to try to give pleasure to Krishna by serving the devotees nicely. Just I was coming this last night, I was just coming from Govinda's, and I was just walking past the temple, and some Mataji, she came out, she says, Amal Bhakta, I just got back from India, and I got all these sweets. Would you like some? I said, well, if you like to give me one, why not? So there were all these little beautiful sweet balls. There were white ones and brown ones. I said, well, I'm an old chocolate freak, so give me the dark brown ones. So she picked out a nice one, and just fresh from Vrindavan. This is such a nice thing. Not that I was craving and crying and begging and wanting, walking around, oh, Krishna, if I can only get that sweet ball from Vrindavan. I wasn't thinking like that. I wasn't even thinking, and that's what makes it so beautiful and wonderful. You're just walking along, and you're not. You're just walking. You're going back towards your place, and suddenly it's like Krishna is saying, "Hey, I'm appreciating so many things you have done, and through this Mataji, I will express my love to you." So don't think it's just her, but it's I working through her heart to you. This is my way of saying thank you. So that's my interpretation of it. That all this love, which is coming from so many wonderful devotees, it's all coming from Krishna. So when you get praised, when you get honored, when you get glorified, when your person's celebrates your birthday or whatever it might be, all this is love coming from Krishna. And while we thank the devotee for those expressions and those affections, nonetheless, ultimately, we know that these things come from Krishna. And when a devotee offers something, we should not be so foolish as to, for example, sometimes a devotee will praise another devotee and say, oh, you know, I really love the way you worship on the altar. You do it with such finesse and with carefulness. And I could even see your feelings of affection manifesting to the deity. But you just accept these things as Krishna's love for you. You accept them, but you don't keep them. You give them. To whom? You give them to your spiritual master, and he gives them to his spiritual master, and down the line it goes of disciplic succession, and ultimately it reaches Krishna. And when it reaches Krishna, of course, Krishna is seeing that you're not keeping, you're not holding on to those things. If you hold on to the praise and the adoration and the glorification, what will happen as we become proud? We become complacent. We become vain. Oh, yes, I'm such a great worshiper of the deity. Oh, I'm such a great singer. Oh, I'm such a great cook. Oh, I'm such a this. I'm a such a that. You're such a nothing. That's what you really are. But you're thinking you're somebody. You're thinking you're something. No, you're absolutely nothing. And when you actually come to the conclusion that you are nothing, that's when you really become something. It's just a fact. Why something? Because it means you totally surrendered, totally submitted, totally offered yourself to Krishna, brought yourself to the point of being a zero, and in that circle of the zero, Krishna fills up the space and gives himself to you. And you give yourself to others, and therefore that's why you become a something by becoming a nothing. Sounds a little ironic. A little play on words, thank you. So I'd like to just conclude this talk by emphasizing the necessity and the usefulness of glorifying devotees. We have one devotee. He's going to run out as soon as I mention his name. But I will do it because he deserves praise and he's been around for a long time. And every time I meet him, he never stops glorifying me, our wonderful Vishal here. You see, he's already going like this, thumbs down. So why should I glorify him for this? Because it's something that, not that I'm asking him, okay, Vishal, make sure I get at least 10 praises when I walk out here. That's not the idea. The idea is that this is the love of Krishna flowing through a devotee, and it should be seen as that, and it should be appreciated as that, it should be cherished as that, and then offered up to, ultimately, to Krishna. And that way, Krishna then continues to show his affection, his warmth, his love, his concern, his care, his thoughtfulness for your progress. That's the easiest way to make fast progress, to honor and glorify and praise his devotees genuinely. I don't mean just as a pretense. That's not the idea. We're not here for this is not a school of diplomacy where you learn to say nice things, but you really don't mean them. No, you mean them because you see the wonderful activities that devotees do, and you treasure them, as I said, you cherish them, and you want to encourage him or her to please continue that wonderful, glorious work, which is work or service to Krishna. So I'll conclude on that night. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Are there any questions or comments? You still have a few moments before I cut you off. No? No, no. You got a question? Vishal? Uh-oh, no praises now. Okay. Yes, Prabhuji.
So, Prabhu, I was wondering, you mentioned in the beginning of your lecture that Krishna is always happy, always blissful, ever increasingly happy. And blissful. But sometimes the gopis, once he had a headache, and they try to relieve Krishna of his headache. And then Krishna's like paradukaduki. He's happy to see others happy and unhappy to see others unhappy. So could you explain the apparent contradiction?
What was the last thing you said? I'm happy to see others
unhappy.
I never heard that.
Paraduki, he doesn't like to see his devotees. He's called Hari, one who takes away the suffering of
yes.
his devotees.
So what is the question now, please?
Would that make him happy to see others, his devotees unhappy?
Oh, well, we have to see the Prayas and Shreyas aspect of this thing by the immediate effect and the long-range effect. So although Krishna may take away as you said, is Hari. He takes away your wealth. He takes away your good fortune. He may take away your opulence. He may take all those and put you in an impoverished position, but not for the purpose of his enjoyment to see you impoverished. He sees the ultimate result, and the ultimate result is when you are impoverished, when you have lost all these things, when you see that you have absolutely nothing really, and you never really had anything except what Krishna gave you, but you thought you gave it to yourself as a result of false ego. So when Krishna removes that false ego from you by taking it away, and he makes you realize that you really got it from him, so that you assign or you place or you fix the true giver to Krishna, and then you learn to depend upon him and not take it for granted, well, that's a good thing. So sometimes Krishna needs to take things away, make us a little miserable, so that we look up to him, we look after him, we don't want to forget him, and we keep on serving him. We can forget to serve him when we begin to think we're the doer. So therefore, Krishna doesn't like to even have to do that, but he will do it in order to enable us to become so blissful in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Dead ringer.